Wrestling Radio, LockerRoomHQ.com.
Screw you guys. And that guy is too dumb. Think about the booking on that. That explains even less. This was the absolute worst thing I have ever seen any time in my entire life, and now I'm going to go kill myself. Oh, what can you do? All right, ladies and gentlemen, whether you like it or not, this is Dirt, your host for Wrestling Radio. Today is, what is today? Tuesday something? It's Tuesday, a day in November. The 16th. 16th November. We're here to talk about the three-hour old-school Monday Night Raw, and since I never did a show on it last week, I'll talk a little bit about SmackDown. But I didn't do a show on SmackDown last week because the show was just god-awful, and I had other stuff going on, and I thought, you know what? SmackDown is just not worth it this week. I don't know if it was the fact that they were overseas and they were jet-lagged, but all the matches just came off as slow and terrible. There was no excitement to the show. The only good thing, really, on the show was Paul Bearer. Paul Bearer was tied to a wheelchair, and he couldn't speak, he couldn't move, but he could move his eyes, gesture with his eyes, make expressions with his eyes. Paul Bearer said more with his eyes on that episode of SmackDown than any of the guys who cut promos out there. So that should tell you just the show, who cares? The entire thing was just terrible. So anyway, that's about all you need to know about SmackDown. So there you go. There's your SmackDown recap. All right, let's talk about Raw. Raw was the old school. It was a three-hour Raw. It was the very special episode. And as three-hour Raws go, this is probably the best three-hour Raw, maybe in the history of the company, they've ever done. This was the first three-hour Raw I think I've ever seen where I didn't feel like after the first hour and 45 minutes, like I wanted to jump off a bridge because I knew there was more show coming. Usually the three-hour Raws just go on and on and on and on and on and on. They have to pad for a lot of time. They have guys doing a lot of goofy stuff just to, you know, they got to get out there. They got to get in front of the crowd. They have to be on TV. But, you know, they don't really have stuff for them to do. And, you know, it just gets so annoying after a while. So this one I thought was actually pretty good because, you know, at one point, I kind of looked at the clock, and it was, 9:16, and, you know, here in the Central Time Zone, Raw, three-hour Raw started at 7 o'clock, so I knew there was only, even if they had an overrun, you know, it's at the most another hour left, and I felt like, I wasn't even to the halfway point of my interest peaking. So I thought the show did a really excellent job. They did a lot of neat stuff. They had the old Titantron set up, the rectangular with the steel girders. They had the steel girder watchtowers on either side. But then they had the early 90s Raw logo, the pink RAW set up underneath the Titantron for the guys to walk out through. They were not on a stage. They were flat on the floor. So it just kind of had this mix feeling of those early episodes of Raw, a little bit of this, a little bit of that. I love that original Titantron with the steel girders. I always loved that one, so I was glad to see that look back. But they had the ring set up with the white ring posts and the the light blue ring posts with the red, white, and blue ropes. They had the light blue mats taped down at ringside. They had the steel, the old school steel guardrails, and the graphics throughout the night were the old WWF logo. the 80s version of the logo. They had some guys wearing the new generation logo, and I think that was on the ring apron as well. And guys like, oh my gosh, like Justin Roberts was wearing a frilly 70s prom tuxedo and a wig on, make it look like he had long curly hair, or not curly hair, but wavy hair. They had Jerry the King Lawler in his early 90s King gear with the big shoulder pads and whatnot. They had Michael Cole dressed up as Vince McMahon in the old suit or tuxedo, three-piece suit maybe, I think it was, that he used to wear. And they were sitting at the exposed folding table and folding chairs at ringside with the old black and white monitors. And, you know, it was just kind of – everything was set up with that old school feel. They had, you know, cutaways throughout the night with Gene Okerlund backstage doing the, WWF update. And him talking about the old school merchandise that was on sale. They just did lots of stuff. Unfortunately, the one thing they did not do, and this is the one thing that makes me sad, the one thing they did not do, they had George the Animal Steel on the show, made an appearance. But the one thing they didn't do is have him chow down on a WWF ice cream bar. That's the one thing this show was missing. And if it happened, maybe it happened and I missed it. I don't know. But that's the one thing they needed, was him just chowing down on one of those ice cream bars. But overall, fantastic idea for a three-hour show. Lots of fun. Super exciting. Terrible go-home show for the pay-per-view. The only thing that really hammered down the pay-per-view was your main event segment. And granted, that's where you want the hardest hammering home of your pay-per-view. But it just kind of felt like throughout the night, we saw segment after segment, match after match, and things would kind of, sometimes they would go, oh, they're going to have a match at Survivor Series, and that would be about it. They didn't hammer home, they should have had, Jerry Lawler and Michael Cole standing there, running down the card of what's going to be on the pay-per-view. They should have Mean Gene Okerlund come out onto his little stage off to the side there, run down the card of what's going to be on the pay-per-view. Pay-per-view this Sunday, pay-per-view this Sunday, pay-per-view this Sunday. And they didn't do any of that. It was just pretty much just the main event was the only thing that hammered it home. So in that regard, it was a failure. But otherwise, the show was a lot of fun. They opened up with they had a new video package, which was actually an old video package mixed with a new video package. They took the old mid-90s Raw, I don't even know what year. Like, I would hate to say the year because I know I'm going to be wrong, but I don't know, 94 to 96 maybe on Raw, 95, 96. But then they put in all the video clips of the people who are currently on Raw, but it had the old music. And when they cut to the arena, they had the sirens blaring like they used to do on Raw, which is super annoying. But they had Mean Gene Okerlund come out, and he cut a promo with Bob Orton Sr. And he just basically said Randy wasn't there because, or Bob Orton Jr., I'm sorry. Bob Orton Sr. is a much older gentleman. Cowboy Bob Orton Jr. He said Randy wasn't there because Randy didn't realize that the show started an hour early, but, he'll be there eventually. But he said, it doesn't matter, who's in there. It doesn't matter about John Cena. It doesn't matter about Wade Barrett. Randy will retain the title. So Wade Barrett came out, just basically said that, Bob, you were never world champion. I will be champion. So then, of course, this brought out Miz. Miz talked about how he could cash in Money in the Bank, and that would just ruin Barrett's plans. And, if he took the title, then Wade Barrett would be out of the match at Survivor Series. So John Cena appeared on the screen, challenged Miz to a match. Miz accepted, and that was it for the opening segment. It was pretty... it was fun. It was a lot better than your, average deal where a guy comes out, starts talking, the other guy comes out, interrupts, then the next guy comes out and interrupts. Then they just kind of start to shove, and then everybody hits the finishing move, and then music hits. That's kind of what you come to expect. It was nice to have that change up. But the main thing here was that Mean Gene Okerlund and Cowboy Bob, those two guys pretty much showed that the new guys out there cutting promos, a lot of them have so much to learn. they did such a tremendous job, these two old guys out there, that it really kind of, it was kind of sad to think about what, you know, new guys are trying to do, that there's some sort of magic, that these old guys picked up on, maybe because they worked more in front of the crowd, and maybe because, you know, maybe being set aside from the ring, having the, you know, this actual platform that you stand and talk on, you know, a lot of the guys, you know, WCW always had that little, like NASA control room. Like I never understood what that room was supposed to be. It looked like the cafeteria from the movie Alien, but with fluorescent lighting, where, you know, the white walls and the big TV screen in the background. But, you know, they always had someplace kind of separate from the ring where they'd cut those, promos. And then of course later on, WCW had that fake living room from Dallas set. But regardless, you know, I think maybe it just added something to the promo. I don't know, but it could be just me. Anyway, first match for the night, we had Dolph Ziggler versus Mark Henry. Mark Henry came out to his sexual chocolate gimmick, which, you know, that's fine. They were in Hershey, Pennsylvania, so made six do something with chocolate, but they had Dolph Ziggler do one of those pre-recorded promos. When he was coming down to the ring, they had his little face pop up in the corner in the little square and cut promos. They did that for a little while on SmackDown, and it kind of worked, but a lot of guys just really didn't know what to do, and they didn't know what to say, so they just kind of dropped it after a while. But it was fun to see here. Those two guys had a match. You know, it's Dolph Ziggler and Mark Henry. I mean, what are you expecting? Dolph Ziggler did hit the zigzag on Mark Henry. Mark Henry kicked out. So Ziggler hit another zigzag. Mark Henry kicked out. So then he put the sleeper on Mark Henry, and Mark Henry actually passed out. So at least Dolph Ziggler went up against this bigger guy, and he didn't have to lose. You know, usually you have a guy like Dolph Ziggler versus Mark Henry in one of these fun matches. You just have Mark Henry kind of throw him around a bit, maybe sit on his face, do something silly, and he wins. But they actually let Dolph Ziggler win, so I was kind of happy about all of that type of stuff. They had Tyson Kidd, David Hart Smith. They were, you know, just kind of talking backstage about how, you know, they were friends, but they didn't really get along anymore, but they were still a great tag team. Talking about how the British Bulldogs were a great tag team, even though they didn't see always eye to eye outside the ring. And they ran into Tony Atlas. Tony Atlas started talking about working with Rocky Johnson, and he was talking and talking and talking and talking, and he pulls out a bottle of WD-40, and he starts spraying it on his arms and greasing himself up, and he's talking and talking, and the Hart Dynasty just kind of sneaks away. Cut to a commercial, they came back, and Tony Atlas was still talking, but now Yoshitatsu was standing there, as if Yoshitatsu had been walking by during the commercial break, got cornered by Tony Atlas, now had to listen to the story. And so Tony Atlas greasing himself up, talking about Rocky Johnson, and Yoshitatsu basically pantomimes grabbing a sword and committing harikiri to get out of listening to this long-ass story. All right. Heath Slater, Justin Gabriel, your guys from Nexus as your tag champions in a match versus Hart Dynasty. David Hart Smith went to get a tag from Tyson Kidd for the hot tag. Tyson Kidd jumped out of the way, instead hit David Hart Smith with a kick, left grinning that he had screwed over his tag team partner. So Smith took Gabriel's 450 and got pinned. And so feud now between the Hart Dynasty. Tyson Kidd is going to be your heel. There you go. Let's see here. They had R-Truth running into Randy Orton, just basically said, you know, Cena did the right thing when he counted your shoulders because you were down, but, you know, whatever. Cena has to get himself out of Nexus, and Orton needs to understand that. And so Orton just basically said, you know, there's one way he could stop all of this, and that's to punt John Cena in the head, and then John Cena can't interfere in the match or do anything, and then everything will be fine. So, cut back out to the ring. Justin Roberts calls out Howard Finkel. Howard Finkel gets in the ring and does an introduction for the Brooklyn Brawler, which just shows that Howard Finkel, as a guy who has been replaced in the company, is a much better ring announcer than anybody they have working on any of their shows. like Howard Finkel, the Fink, has his own charisma that no one else seems to have, and calling out the Brooklyn Brawler with Harvey Whippleman was actually amazing. Brooklyn Brawler came out, said he was just going to issue an open challenge. Anybody wanted to come out, face him. He didn't care, so Ezekiel Jackson came out. Brooklyn Brawler looked a little upset at this, had a quick little squash match. Ezekiel Jackson won, posed for the crowd, and whatever. Also, during this match, for whatever reason, Michael Cole kept saying, "It's the year 2011. Brooklyn Brawler, what's he doing out here? It's 2011. We're here in 2011. What's wrong with this guy? 2011. Well, for all of you listening, I said the date early on, November 16th. It's November 16th, 2010. Raw was November 15th, 2010. Later on the show, Michael Cole goes, I have to apologize. I said the wrong year. How? I can understand. This is Raw retro. This is old school Raw. I can understand if he said, this is 2009. Because he's thinking backwards in years. But he jumped forward. Maybe he's so against the idea of a retro Raw, he pushed himself into the future. Ladies and gentlemen, it's 2014. What are we doing here with these guys? Why is Mean Gene here? I don't know. That's the only thing I can think of to try to explain that, and that still doesn't make any sense. And as I was sitting there talking about that, I accidentally moved the cursor on my screen. I have no idea where I'm at in this show here in my notes. I think right here, David Otunga stepped up to the guys in back, said, let's see, Wade Barrett wasn't there. So he said, someone needs to take out R-Truth. Otunga said he was the leader of Nexus. Wade Barrett hopped in and said, what do you mean leader? And Otunga said, I said a leader. And Barrett said, fine, you're the one who will wrestle R-Truth. But then the GM chimed in, said Otunga wouldn't face Truth. He had a different match tonight, and he announced it would be Wade Barrett versus Truth. The funny thing is, though, that the GM didn't chime in at the right time, so they're standing around, and it's like they kept looking at the camera. That's the one thing I noticed during this promo. They kept staring at the camera. Like, they kept waiting for the GM to chime in, because when he chimes in, then they're supposed to look at the camera, because then you have the shot of them standing around looking at the camera as if they're up on the screen looking into the arena watching Michael Cole while he's reading this announcement, right? So it's like they're talking and they keep staring at the camera and then realizing that it's not chiming in and then looking away. And it became so obvious after a minute that it's like, why are they all looking at the camera? So anyway, then the GM chimed in, did this whole thing. Let's see here. Wade Barrett said that was fine, being a match with R-Truth. It would prove he could beat anyone on Raw on his own tonight. So basically saying he doesn't need John Cena there. John Cena's just like an insurance policy, basically, right? So then camera pans over. You see John Cena's actually there. Wade Barrett wanted to send McGillicuddy and Husky Harris down with him to the ring, but Cena said he didn't need that and whatever. So they had John Cena go down to the ring for his match with The Miz. Miz came out, said the GM didn't sanction the match. John Cena made the match, so therefore, Miz is going to change the match, and if the GM has a problem with that, he can chime in. And he said he was going to substitute Alex Riley for The Miz. And so Cena, like, you know, started yelling at Michael Cole. Michael Cole said he didn't get any message about it, so it must be fine. So they had John Cena versus Alex Riley, squash match, and it was over. Let's see. After the match, Cena won with a STF. Randy Orton comes running down. Miz and Randy Orton get into a fight. McGillicuddy and Harris run down to the ring, and Orton throws both of those guys out. So Orton and Cena square off, and they get in each other's face. John Cena ends up throwing a punch. They did the pull apart. They had the trainers and referees and whoever come down. And the GM chimed in and said that tonight the two of them would be facing off, but not in a match. It would be on Piper's Pit. Go to commercial, come back. We have Nikolai Volkov and the Iron Sheik in the ring. And Nikolai Volkov starts to sing the Soviet anthem. Santino comes out with Kozlov, says Kozlov would really want to sing the anthem with Volkov. So the two of them start singing, and it was terrible. Crowd started chanting USA. Santino interrupted them, said that their singing was terrible. He said, we needed someone else to come out and sing a better song, or who could sing better, or sing Santino's song, or whatever. And so they started playing Jive Soul Bro. Slick came out, pretended like he was singing along, then realized at some point he couldn't remember the words, so then he stopped singing. So then Santino started trying to sing along. And during all of this, Slick was doing his dance, and for a guy who's, I don't know, in his 60s, 70s, whatever, he's still fine at dancing. Not very good at lip-syncing, but pretty fine doing the dancing. So, Iron Sheik, during the middle of his song, starts going off on Hulk Hogan and how terrible he is, and how Iran is number one, and Russia number one, and then they kind of stop him. They, like, tap him on the shoulder, kind of stop him. They cut the music. Then Santino says, wait, what did you say, Sheik? What did you say? So Iron Sheik starts saying the exact same thing again, second time. And this time he, you know, gets about halfway through what he got through last time, and they cut off his mic and probably were afraid that he was going to just start going off on B. Brian Blair or something. So probably the best move on their part was turning that off. So then they announced... the Usos, they had them come out. They had Jimmy. They announced Superfly Snuka to be in their corner, and it was Kozlov and Santino versus the Usos, and they actually had Santino use the Cobra and get a clean pin. So I guess that means the Usos are being released. I don't know what the deal is with that. I can't see how that's going to work any other way, but regardless. So after that, Santino celebrating, Sheamus runs in, gave Kozlov one of those brogue kicks, shoved down Santino, and then John Morrison ran in and attacked Sheamus, called Sheamus a bully, and just basically said, if you want to fight, you fight me. And so Sheamus got mad and left. So, commercial comeback, David Otunga versus Kofi Kingston. Kofi Kingston did one of those retro inset promos, said he would fly around like Coco Beware. Luckily, he did not. He actually wrestled fine. He and David Otunga wrestled for a while, and then here's where George the Animal Steel just comes wandering out, goes after a turnbuckle, referee runs over, blocks him. They do some sort of distraction, so George the Animal Steel runs over to a different turnbuckle and rips it open, pulls out the padding, throws some at the crowd, throws some at the camera, throws some at the referee, and then he and the referee get out of the ring, and David Otunga gets up and is looking at the exposed turnbuckle and thinking he should do something about it, and so Kofi Kingston takes the opportunity of Otunga thinking about it to grab him, throw him into the exposed turnbuckle, hit the Trouble in Paradise, referee comes in, he gets the pin. They had Arn Anderson, Jerry Briscoe talking with John Morrison backstage, and suddenly, out of nowhere, Sheamus' leg came on screen and kicked John Morrison. Eventually, the rest of Sheamus followed, and he said he accept Morrison's challenge for a match at Survivor Series. Went to another spot backstage. We had Hacksaw Jim Duggan. He told Oksana that her mother was around the corner. And so she walked around the corner and found Dusty Rhodes wearing a Sable wig. Kelly Kelly popped out from behind one of the fake walls and dropped a net on Oksana. Goldust took out the $1 million belt from Oksana, said he was going to give it to the rightful owner. Out came IRS and the $1 million man, gave it to Ted DiBiase. Ted DiBiase turned to his son, Ted DiBiase, who randomly appeared, said he was going to give it to him since, you know, he gave it to him. It was rightfully his now, and he was passing it along to him. And DiBiase Jr. said he didn't want it. He wanted something that wasn't a hand-me-down, and he left. And so then, let's see, then what happened? Then Randy, oh, God, I'm lost in my notes here. So then what happened? Oh, then Cody Rhodes. Cody Rhodes walked up, said something to Goldust about Dash. He's dashing off just like I'm dashing or something. And Goldust said, give me some of your grooming tips. Help a brother out because they're brothers. Rhodes said, get away from me. Goldust followed. Dusty said, I have weird kids. They started playing his old music. Everybody started dancing. Tatanka appeared out of nowhere. Someone else appeared. I don't remember who, but everyone's dancing all goofy. Then finally, Ron Simmons walks in, starts looking around, stared at them, stared at the camera, stared away, stared at them, stared off into the air, stared at them, and then said, "Damn." And it was goofy and, you know, silly, retarded, whatever, but it was fine. They had Wade Barrett versus R-Truth. Fine match. No big deal. They had Wade Barrett beat R-Truth to show that he can win without someone else being there. Won clean. Kind of sucks for R-Truth, but that's what they need for Wade Barrett to be a credible opponent. They go to commercial, come back. They had Alberto Del Rio's ring announcer in the ring. He starts to talk, but then suddenly Tito Santana's music hits. He comes out. He introduces Alberto Del Rio. So I guess Tito Santana's heel now. So then the car pulls in, and Chavo Guerrero Sr. gets out of the driver's seat and opens Del Rio's limo. So apparently this is one of those things where it's like, you know, it's like, what was the joke? George Wallace, not the racist from Alabama, but the comedian. If you remember George Wallace, the black comedian, he said, "I'm going to let you in on a secret about black people. We do all know each other. That's why we all call each other brother, because we're all related." This is one of those things where I guess everybody who's a Mexican or Cuban, Puerto Rican, from the Dominican Republic, apparently they're all related because they all part of some big family. They all work together, heel or face, apparently, when they're in the land of the white man. I don't know. So Alberto Del Rio talked about Americans being lazy, fat. Sergeant Slaughter came out, challenged him to a match. He got him in the Cobra Clutch, but Del Rio kept getting to the ropes, getting out. So finally he got the pin on Slaughter. Then after he had pinned Slaughter, he put him in an armbar. MVP came out, ran him off, and there you go. They had Mae Young come out with a Bella on either side to make sure she didn't fall down and bust her face. They did a video package for her. They had Lay Cool came out and make fun of her. Mae Young said, "I want a match with these two sluts." So she said she wanted it no DQ, and she said, "Let's get it on, bitches." And so they called for a referee. They made the match no DQ, falls count anywhere, so they started it right there at the entryway. Since it was no DQ, all the face chicks came out, and they beat up Lay Cool. They held up Layla so that Mae Young could slap her. They covered her with one foot, and they counted a three count. So Mae Young had a match in 2010. There you go. From 1930 to 2010. They had Daniel Bryan versus Jack Swagger. They had Jim Ross come out to do commentary. Michael Cole got mad, kept trying to attack JR. JR just paid no attention to him. No sold pretty much everything he said. Jim Ross, Jerry Lawler, oh my gosh. If you want any sort of remembrance of just how terrible Michael Cole is, 2010, Jim Ross doing commentary, just so incredibly amazing. And it's like, oh my God, Michael Cole just needs to get off the TV. I mean, that's all there is, because there's no reason for Michael Cole to be there. He is so terrible. Lawler started attacking Michael Cole because he was sick of listening to all the crap. And they just basically had Vince McMahon, you know, telling Michael Cole to say all this terrible stuff about Jim Ross, and Jim Ross just totally ignored it. Just totally... you know, he made it clear to Vince McMahon what he thought about Vince. He was there to do the show because he liked wrestling and whatever. And so that was, I don't know what the relationship is between those guys, but you can figure it out. Well, Daniel Bryan and Jack Swagger by far had the best match on this show. Better than anything that was on SmackDown last week. I don't know about Raw last week, but these two guys had an awesome match. This is one of those things where you kind of wish that these two guys could be on the same show and have a good feud because these guys are just fantastic. So anyway, Daniel Bryan got in a kick to the head and got the pin. So then at that point, DiBiase Jr. runs out, attacks Daniel Bryan, hits the Dream Street, puts the U.S. title on Daniel Bryan's chest, and celebrates whatever. And so now those two are going to have their feud. It'll be fine, as we've seen them wrestle the last couple weeks, but it won't be as good as Swagger and Daniel Bryan in their match that they had tonight. So anyway, Jim Ross stood up to leave, took off his cowboy hat, and started beating Michael Cole with it a little bit before he left. Let's see here. So, go to commercial, come back, and they had the Piper's Pit segment. And I have to say, everything on this show at this point as selling the pay-per-view was a failure. There was nothing to get you excited for the pay-per-view, nothing to push home the fact that there was a pay-per-view. Survivor Series is a big deal. This could have been a big deal show to push for Survivor Series, but instead it just felt like a neat show that had nothing to do with the pay-per-view. Until this point, Piper's Pit, this was by far the best interview segment I have seen on any WWE program, probably this year, maybe in a couple years. This was fantastic. They had Piper brought out John Cena, and he basically said, you know, I've never been champion. I've never had that belt. And if you hand that belt over to Wade Barrett, you're spitting in the face of me and Jerry Lawler and Jimmy Snuka and all of these other great wrestlers who poured their heart and soul into this business, whatever, and never became champion. And for a moment there, the championship felt like it meant something again. With the way Roddy Piper talked about the World Wrestling Entertainment Championship, World Championship, he made it sound like it was something worth fighting for again. He gave it a meaning it hasn't had in forever. And Cena, you know, talked about how, you know, he doesn't know what the right thing is. He doesn't know, you know, what to do. He's worked as hard as he can. He has tremendous respect for the legends. And he realized that he had to call the match right down the middle because giving away the title ruins the title. So Wade Barrett comes out. Wade Barrett said he proved earlier tonight he can beat anyone on the Raw roster without Cena being there. But he says, Cena, you have to help me or you're fired, you're finished, you're out of this industry. Piper got in his face, told him to shut up, said, you know, if you don't earn that title, you're a joke. The title doesn't mean anything. And Barrett basically waved him off, said, I want Cena to take off your ridiculous purple shirt, put on this Nexus shirt. It'll be the last time you wear one, but it'll remind you, you know, whatever, that you have to do what I tell you. So Randy Orton comes running out. He's kind of stands off like he's not sure if he wants to go for Cena or Wade Barrett. So instead he goes for Barrett, hits him with the power slam, gets ready to hit him with the RKO, but Cena gets in the way, just kind of stands there, blocks him, says, you know, listen, I can't let you do this. So instead Orton gives Cena the RKO. He goes to punt Cena in the head, but instead Cena is able, I think there was some sort of distraction or something, I don't remember what happened, but instead Cena hits him with the FU. Barrett tells Cena to raise his hand in victory, and instead Cena gives him the FU, and Cena then celebrates, and that's the end of the show. So maybe it went on a little too long in that segment, but everything with Roddy Piper was fantastic and perfect, and unfortunately, that's what the whole show should have been. That 3 hours should have been the intensity and the selling of the title, the selling of the importance of wins versus losses, the importance of the pay-per-view. You only got it in the last 20 minutes, but that was a damn fine 20 minutes. One other thing is a lot of people are wondering, okay, so Cena attacks Wade Barrett, then isn't he fired? You know, Wade Barrett said he can beat anybody without Cena. He doesn't really need Cena there. But Wade Barrett can't really beat anybody. He beat R-Truth. And to be fair, as much as I like R-Truth, R-Truth has not been booked and has not been pushed in such a way to be at the same level as anybody who is a world champion. So Wade Barrett beat R-Truth, good for him, but he still can't beat Randy Orton on his own. I mean, at least that should be the storyline. So John Cena attacked Wade Barrett. What's Wade Barrett going to do? Is he going to say, well, you're fired and I'm going to win this match at Survivor Series on my own? He can't win the match on his own. He needs John Cena there. So your storyline is John Cena realized that Wade Barrett was talking out of his butt and saying he can beat anybody. He doesn't really need John Cena. And he said, okay, really? Well, then fire me. Go ahead and do it. And so he hit him with the FU. So kind of an interesting twist there. And I thought it was a pretty interesting overall episode of Raw. It was a lot of fun. Terrible go-home show, but still a lot of fun to watch.
My name is Sween Hollick, and if you're into Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, have I got a column for you. Go over to PopCultureNetwork.com and take a look at Radical Retro Turtle Toy Talk, where each and every week we meander down memory lane as I review classic figures from the original Playmates Ninja Turtle toy line. Whether you're a longtime follower of the Fab Four or just getting into the Green Teens, I don't think you'll be disappointed. That's Radical Retro Turtle Toy Talk, and you can only find it at popculturenetwork.com.
Check out www.lockerroomhq.com for the rest of our exciting podcasts about sports talk and pro wrestling. And don't forget the rest of www.popculturenetwork.com for everything else from toys to comic books and video games and everything else you love. It's www.popculturenetwork.com.
Hey guys, I'm Rob Bass. I host a show called Comic Nation TV, where the world of comic books and complete fandom collide. We have great reviews by Pop Culture Network's very own Dirt and Comics Corner's reviewer Ryan Porter, along with our newest member Juan Pineda, who hosts The Art of Comics. So if you guys love comics, hope you check out our show, only on the Pop.
And don't forget to check out the Pop Culture Network store, where everything you buy helps to keep us on the air. That's www.popculturenetwork.com. All right, ladies and gentlemen, whether you like it or not, this is Dirt, your host for Wrestling Radio here in Locker Room HQ, part of the Pop Culture Network. And as always, the Pop Culture Network is the station you're listening to because it's the one that has what you wanted to hear. So I don't know. I've been trying to come up with a tagline. Obviously, that doesn't work. I'll have to keep working on it, I guess, because that was just god-awful. All right, folks, we're going to talk about SmackDown. We're going to talk about Survivor Series. We've got some news and things to talk about. So let's just jump right in, shall we, with the big news that came out of WWE this last week were the cuts. We had Luke Gallows was cut. Shad Gaspard was cut. He had been sent back down to Florida Championship Wrestling and apparently just never clicked, never was able to, kind of move beyond where he had been in tag status, and so he was cut. Tiffany, she was cut. Of course, she has not been on TV in months and months and months ever since she had some freak out with Drew McIntyre at the Playboy Mansion and ended up getting arrested. So ever since then, she's been off TV, and eventually they just decided to drop her from the company. Kaelin Croft, Vance Archer, that makes me sad. Kaelin Croft, Vance Archer, they were both the Dude Busters, I believe. I'm going to double check that. You would think I would do research before I start the show, no, I really don't. Let's see, Kaelin Croft. Oh, Trent Beretta. Trent Beretta was it. So they kept. Oh, right, Vance Archer was the Gate Crasher, not the Dude Buster. It was Vance Archer and another guy whose name escapes me because he was also pretty worthless. All right, Dude Buster's broken up and the Gate Crashers are broken up. So Kaelin Croft, Vance Archer, both gone. Jillian Hall. Amazingly enough, Jillian Hall, she was always seen as a person who could come on and be a good trainer for the women. And that was something that they had spoken of doing with her long term. But apparently, for whatever reason, they just decided that that just wasn't going to work anymore. And so Jillian Hall has been released. And then, of course, Big Dick Johnson, that's actually Christopher DeJoseph. He was a writer for WWE. Big Dick Johnson, he is the big, fat, oily guy, comes out and dances on screen with, whenever they're doing one of those wacky scenes and they need the big, fat guy to come out and spray oil and he's in the thong and whatever. Originally, it was just announced that he had left the company. And a couple places like WrestlingObserver.com were reporting it as he had asked for his release from the company. But later, then word came out that no, in fact, he was cut. There was something about him that caused some sort of problem. Whatever, we don't have the whole story yet. He'll probably do a shoot or something in the next couple weeks, and we'll find out. But just for now, he has been fired from the company. So, pretty big house cleaning there. On the flip side, TNA did sign a new deal with Eric Young. So originally his contract had expired. He could not come to terms with them. So he just said, fine, I'm leaving. Goodbye. Thanks for the opportunity. And apparently, I'm guessing one of them blinked, and I'm guessing it's probably TNA, probably blinked, said, okay, what do you want? Was it about money? Was it benefits? Was it travel? What was the deal? And they worked it out. So that's what's going on with as far as that news and notes go. We're going to talk about SmackDown kind of quickly. SmackDown... Okay, here's the deal with SmackDown. SmackDown was a much better show for selling the pay-per-view than Raw was. Raw was the old-school Raw gimmick. SmackDown was very much a Survivor Series preview show. They kept talking about a lot of matches as a Survivor Series preview. And so, from that point of view, it did work a whole lot better. The problem was, a lot of the matches on Survivor Series on paper, as far as feuds go, wanting to see people fight, not that great. So you got Survivor Series preview matches, but they were, you know, feuds you really don't care about a whole lot. So the show overall, it was a much more solid show than Raw, but it was not fantastic. But here's the deal. I was thinking about this the other day. And SmackDown used to be a network show. And granted, it was UPN, and then it was My Network TV. Not exactly, you know... The greatest TV networks, failed networks, you can actually call them, as a matter of fact. But, you know, they were still network TV. And network TV pulls in a different audience than a cable channel. And it's still pretty much the same demographic most of the time, but it's a different group of people. You know, when I was growing up, I lived in a household that did not have cable. I did not have cable TV until I moved out of the house, you know, on my own after I was 18, and I said, I'm going to pay for cable television. But growing up in a house that had no cable TV, I watched all of these syndicated wrestling shows, Superstars and Wrestling Challenge and whatnot. And then when WWE started pushing more for the USA Network and putting more stuff on cable, and the infomercials started kind of pushing the show, you know, out of syndication and off of your local TV networks, that's when I got out of wrestling, because I just couldn't watch it anymore. You know, if there was anything I could watch, it was just one of those silly recap shows, and what's the point of watching one of those if you can't actually see the real matches? So, even though SmackDown was on, you know, failed TV networks, it still reached to a different group, a group that wasn't, you know, a dedicated cable viewing audience. And another big thing with SmackDown is that it had very low DVR numbers. It was mostly people who on Friday night sat down in front of the TV and watched 2 hours of wrestling. And so now that they're on Sci-Fi, it's back to a different group. It's a different market. It's a different it's a viewing audience much more similar to what you see on Raw. And so therefore, they... Apparently, this is what they've decided, and we'll see how well it works on this. You know, Survivor Series being kind of this test. They've kind of tested a little bit more before, but it was a lot more blatant this time around. Raw was a gimmick show. It was a 3-hour show. It got people, you know, just to tune in and watch Raw, but they really didn't hammer the pay-per-view. It was more about selling WWE. When it came to SmackDown on Friday night, then it was 2 days before the pay-per-view, and it was hammer the pay-per-view. Pay-per-view, 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 all night long. And so we'll have to see, you know, what kind of difference it makes in numbers. Survivor Series traditionally does a pretty good number. It's seen as one of the big five throughout the year, but it has struggled the last few years to get a good viewer base. And, you know, Vince McMahon at one time was even talking about dropping Survivor Series completely. Then they were talking about keeping the name but losing the format of the match. Well, they've decided to go ahead and keep it, and let's be honest, I don't think anybody bought Survivor Series to see the Survivor Series match. Nobody cares. Nobody wants to see a 5-on-5 elimination match. You can see those all the time. You know, we saw them right before Night of Champions. We saw them right before Bragging Rights. We saw them right before WrestleMania. You know, you see them all the time. So in that sense, it is a failure to continue to try to draw an audience. But I think it is, you know, fair to say that Survivor Series, the name as a pay-per-view, still has a draw. It's still seen as one of the big ones. So, SmackDown was centered more about Survivor Series. It opened up with a couple video packages. Then we had Del Rio in the ring talking about MVP. So MVP came out, got in his face. MVP wanted a fight with him. Del Rio said, "Nope, I'm in a match with Rey Mysterio, but I tell you what, you can't fight with Drew McIntyre." So MVP versus Drew McIntyre had a fine match. Nothing really special about it. It basically had a quick finish. Drew McIntyre charged at MVP. MVP ducked out of the way. So McIntyre slammed into the corner. MVP hit the drive-by boot and got the pinfall. So there you go. We had a promo in back with Edge talking about Kane in a feud that nobody cares about. Chavo Guerrero was in back complaining to Teddy Long. Kane came in, yelled a bunch of stuff, started throwing furniture. I don't know what the hell was going on. He was freaking out about Paul Bearer, but, you know, who cares? We had Chris Masters versus Jack Swagger. This was a Survivor Series preview since both those guys are on opposing teams. It was a fun match. Jack Swagger, I think, really looked good here. Chris Masters continues to look like a guy who will never get out of the mid-card. He just has, you know, he's lacking a certain charisma. Jack Swagger looked like a guy who needs to get more of an upwardly mobile push. But the match itself was fine. Jack Swagger got the ankle lock submission. Let's see, we had Edge in the back again. I don't even remember who he was talking to, they ended up playing dodgeball and beating somebody in the head. I don't know. Anyway, then we had Caval in the back, and Caval and Dolph Ziggler had a match, and this was actually a lot of fun. I think Caval and Dolph Ziggler have a good chemistry. Dolph Ziggler, you know, I've been talking about him for a while. I think he's great. Caval, of course, everybody loves. So two of them had a fine little match. Caval won, and he started to celebrate and go crazy and hug the referee and jumped up on the referee and just celebrated and ran out to the crowd and grabbed the microphone and said, because he won NXT, he gets a chance at a title shot whenever he chooses. So he's going to face Dolph Ziggler at the pay-per-view for his Intercontinental title. And people popped for it. Caval sounded great. This came across as people who care about the belt. So I was fine with everything having to do with this. They had Edge in the back, working out and playing with the wheelchair and whatever. We got Kofi Kingston versus Cody Rhodes. This is another Survivor Series preview match with both guys on the opposing teams. It was an okay match, but it looked a little sloppy in parts. It looked like Kofi missed something at one point and Cody missed something else going on. But the crowd was into it and it built well. So eventually Cody grabbed a handful of hair and a handful of tights and used it to his advantage to put Kofi Kingston into the crossroads and get the pinfall. Then we cut back to Kane in the back and yelling around and screaming, and Rosa looked freaked out, and he was yelling about Edge and whatever. Go back to the ring. We had Lay Cool versus Natalya and Kelly Kelly, of course, because Natalya is 2-on-1 versus Lay Cool at the pay-per-view. Did a quick little match. It was short. Really not a whole lot to it. I don't even know if Kelly started out, then tagged into Natalya, and I don't think Kelly ever came back in. Michelle McCool got a blind tag. They did a double boot on Natalya and got the pinfall, so whatever. Cut back to the back. We had Edge again. And he had Paul Bearer tied up and started dumping food on him and whatever. Go to commercial, come back. We had Kane in the back, and he was crying because he missed his daddy. And, oh, gosh. Back out to the ring, we had Big Show versus Tyler Rex, Survivor Series preview match, because the two guys on opposing teams. Quick little match, Big Show ended up hitting the choke slam, getting the pin on Tyler Rex. Went to the back, had Alberto Del Rio, and he was captain versus captain match. Him and Rey Mysterio wanted to have this match, and talked about how you know, he was going to become the biggest hero now after he defeats Rey. Then we went back to Edge again, and he was out back in the parking lot, and he was yelling for Kane, pulled the tape off Paul Bearer's mouth, and Paul Bearer started yelling, and Kane came running out trying to find Edge, and Edge ended up jumping off a car onto Kane, tossed him around a couple times. Edge got into the car, had Paul Bearer in the back, and drove off, making some sort of crack about how we're going to see Paul Bearer drown, whatever. So finally, we got Alberto Del Rio versus Rey Mysterio in their match. And when Rey went to go for the 619, Del Rio ran to the outside, and the entire team ran down and attacked Rey Mysterio. So Rey Mysterio won by DQ, but then Rey Mysterio's team ran down. And, you know, huge fight between these two teams. So Teddy Long came out and said, you're going to have a Battle Royal Survivor Series preview. And they basically just ended up with Big Show and Rey Mysterio getting rid of the final guys on the other team, and those two guys got the win. So Rey Mysterio, Big Show, forced to be reckoned with, big guy, little guy. That's your story for SmackDown. So there you go, everybody. That's what you missed. If you missed SmackDown, you missed way, way, way too much of Kane versus Edge. They know that nobody cares about this feud. Nobody gives a crap. It's really just kind of a placeholder until Undertaker can heal and come back, but they know it's going to be a while, and they have to throw a lot into it. So just had way too much going on with that. I don't think there's anybody out there who cares about that feud. Maybe you do. I don't know. If you do, let me know. But we're going to take a quick commercial break, and then when we come back, we will have your look at the Survivor Series pay-per-view.
My name is Sween Hollick, and if you're into Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, have I got a column for you. Go over to PopCultureNetwork.com and take a look at Radical Retro Turtle Toy Talk, where each and every week we meander down memory lane as I review classic figures from the original Playmates Ninja Turtle toy line. Whether you're a longtime follower of the Fab Four or just getting into the Green Teens, I don't think you'll be disappointed. That's Radical Retro Turtle Toy Talk, and you can only find it at PopCultureNetwork.com.
Check out www.LockerRoomHQ.com for the rest of our exciting podcasts about sports talk and pro wrestling. And don't forget the rest of www.PopCultureNetwork.com for everything else from toys to comic books and video games and everything else you love. It's www.PopCultureNetwork.com.
Hey guys, I'm Rob Bass. I host a show called Comic Nation TV, where the world of comic books and complete fandom collide. We have great reviews by Pop Culture Network's very own Dirt and Comics Corner's reviewer Ryan Porter, along with our newest member Juan Pineda, who hosts The Art of Comics. So if you guys love comics, hope you check out our show, only on The Pop.
And don't forget to check out the Pop Culture Network store, where everything you buy helps to keep us on the air. That's www.PopCultureNetwork.com. You know, one of these years I'm going to have to update those commercials. It's kind of funny, because most of those people have recorded new commercials. I just haven't bothered to get them on my computer yet. Yes, everybody, we're back. This is Wrestling Radio, Locker Room HQ, part of the Pop Culture Network. I, of course, whether you like it or not, am your host, Dirt, and we're here now to talk about the Survivor Series. Show opened with a big video package. Will Cena screw over Randy Orton, or will he get fired? It's kind of funny because the way they played this, it was really not about whether or not Wade Barrett would be champion, not about whether or not Randy Orton could continue his dynasty, his seventh reign as world champion. It was really, what is John Cena's decision going to be? And obviously, you know, they're not going to turn him heel. So what's the decision going to be? Well, the only thing they can do then at that point is have him call it right down the line and get fired. So at that point, I was pretty much sure that John Cena was getting fired. But we would have to wait and see what would happen. Daniel Bryan versus Ted DiBiase for the United States title. This was a fantastic match. Of course, Daniel Bryan is great. Him and Ted DiBiase had some matches that were hit and miss in the past. But these two guys had a lot of fun. They had a really good match here. It ended up with Daniel Bryan fighting for the LaBelle Lock with Ted DiBiase, and the two of them actually made it look like a struggle. So it was really, you know, kind of fun to watch, but eventually he locked it in, DiBiase tapped out, Maurice looked pissed, and then The Miz and Alex Riley came running out and attacked Daniel Bryan with the briefcase. Miz cut a promo, said something about some basketball teams and whatever, and who cares, and then he ended up leaving, and the best part was, there were some issues with the lighting here tonight. A couple times the lights seemed to flicker off for a second and then come back on. Well, they flicked off right as Miz was doing his catchphrase. It was great because it made him look like a total tool. They had Sheamus versus John Morrison, and they played it off as, you know, the storyline has been John Morrison has been attacking Sheamus because Sheamus is a bully. So John Morrison is standing up to this bully, and he's going to teach him a lesson on how to treat other people and whatnot and here, there, and whatever. And, you know, I have to admit, I didn't really expect a lot out of this match. It's a feud that, you know, I don't necessarily care about, but I do like Sheamus. I would like to see Sheamus turn face. I posted something on my Facebook about it, and people immediately started asking me questions if I'm a big fan of mayonnaise, and, you know, I am. I'm a white guy. But, you know, I'd love to see Sheamus turn, but these two guys had a match, and it ended up being a lot of fun. John Morrison actually got the win because Sheamus missed the brogue kick, and Morrison jumped up under the middle rope, hit a flying kick, hit the Shining Wizard, and got the pin. And amazingly enough, it was just a clean win for John Morrison over Sheamus. And I know that the plan is not to bury Sheamus. This is not Sheamus getting beat by a smaller guy because he's being punished for something. He's friends with Triple H, and the two of them have something worked out for Triple H's return. But they had Sheamus lose here and lose clean to John Morrison, which I'm hoping is part of a push for John Morrison. And I'm kind of hoping it will be a situation where John Morrison is starting to get a push. He's going to have some big money match for Sheamus, but then Triple H is going to come in, steal his thunder, take his spot, whatever, and then it'll help to turn John Morrison back heel where he needs to go. I don't think that'll happen, but I'm hoping. Anyway, they had a segment backstage, R-Truth, John Cena. R-Truth said, you know, Nexus is banned from ringside, but, you know, it's a no DQ match, and so I'm not banned from ringside. I could run out and, you know, cause something to happen, and you go ahead and count. And, you know, it wouldn't be your fault if, you know, there happens to be some sort of DQ there. It's not your fault. You know, I could come in and help you out. And John Cena just said, no, I would never be able to live with myself if I did something like that. Get out of here. And so R-Truth got mad and just basically said, you know, I'll believe it when I see it if you're really going to stand up to your principles. So, of course, once they said that again, John Cena is going to have to stand up to his principles, get fired. Dolph Ziggler versus Caval. This was a great match. Not as much heat as I expected, especially considering the reaction that happened on SmackDown. But then again, how many people watch SmackDown versus Raw and show up to these pay-per-views? And it's funny. I was watching, I don't remember where it was, but there was some sort of breakdown of people at Live Raw, Live SmackDown, and Live pay-per-views. And Live pay-per-views are much more of a social event than a Raw or a SmackDown. Raw versus SmackDown is, more of the, if you want to say, more of the hardcore fan who is there to just see the show, whereas the pay-per-view, if Survivor Series is coming to your town, Elimination Chamber, you know, something like that, you're much more willing to find that random friend, that guy at work, who doesn't really watch wrestling, but he's willing to come to the pay-per-view. He won't pay, you know, $25 to come to Raw, or $34.95 to sit in the front row of SmackDown, or anything like that, but, you know, for a pay-per-view, then they're willing to go. It has more of that, you know, if you want to say, the big fight atmosphere. And so the crowds at pay-per-views are a lot of times different than the crowds you're going to find at Raw or SmackDown. But anyway, Dolph Ziggler versus Caval, it was a great match. But there was one point where Caval threw Dolph Ziggler into the ropes. And Dolph Ziggler came off the ropes, and it looked like he was expecting some sort of reversal coming off the ropes. And Caval, instead of the reversal, went for a kick. And I'm not sure exactly what was supposed to happen, but what did happen is Dolph Ziggler got kicked in the face hard. I mean, as soon as he hit, you could tell, you know, the commentary guys, usually, you know, Jerry Lawler will see a big hit and be like, oh my gosh, did you see that big hit? You know, and do something, you know, say some silly line or whatever. In this situation, as soon as Caval landed that kick on Dolph Ziggler's face, all three guys on commentary were just like, oh, totally unscripted, you know, totally out of nowhere. And later on, you could see that Dolph Ziggler was, in fact, bleeding from the nose. So he may have broken his nose. They even commented that he may have broken his nose, and he very well may have. But still, it was a fun match. But eventually, Caval had Dolph Ziggler in the cradle. Looked like he was going to win, but Ziggler reversed, grabbed the trunks, used it for the extra leverage, and retained the title. So hopefully that was a screw job type finish against Caval so that their feud can continue, because I'd like to see some more matches out of those guys. They had Jack Swagger backstage. He was upset that the part of Miami they're in is called Little Cuba. He said, "You know, I'm an American. You know, I don't want to be in Little Cuba." Cody Rhodes came in, started making fun of him. Del Rio came in with Drew McIntyre and whoever else was on their team. I don't remember, but anyway. Started talking about, you know, how you have to hold the team together. He's the captain. Everybody should follow him because that's how they're going to win tonight. And the match is basically already won. Just trust him. So next we got the Team Mysterio versus Team Del Rio. Rey Mysterio, Big Show, MVP, Chris Masters, and Kofi Kingston. If you can guess out of those five guys, Rey Mysterio, Big Show, MVP, Chris Masters, and Kofi Kingston, who got no reaction from the crowd out of those five guys? Well, if you say Chris Masters, you are correct. And then we had Team Del Rio come out. Of course, Alberto Del Rio, Drew McIntyre, Jack Swagger, Cody Rhodes, and Tyler Rex. And if you can guess, out of those five guys, who got no sort of reaction? Tyler Rex. MVP got a huge pop, though, because Miami is his hometown where he comes from. So, basically, MVP, because he got the huge reaction, it was his hometown crowd, he was eliminated first. Del Rio ended up getting punched out. He got into a confrontation with Big Show. He tagged in, I believe it was Drew McIntyre, then got smug in Big Show's face. Big Show punched him, knocked him out. Referees dragged him out of the ring, carried him to the back. And so it kind of had that feeling like you thought maybe Del Rio would run back out at the end to make some sort of save, but that never happened. Eventually, it came down to Rey Mysterio and the Big Show versus Drew McIntyre. And Big Show hit the choke slam on McIntyre, got the pin. So just like what happened on SmackDown, they had Big Show and Rey Mysterio win the Survivor Series match. And nobody cared. All right, we had Lay Cool versus Natalya for the Divas title. It was a handicap match. It was really kind of short. Not a whole lot happened. They just had Natalya kind of beat up on both of them. She got over on them. She threw Layla out. She got McCool into the sharpshooter. She had Michelle McCool beat. Like at some point, it looked like she was going to get a three count. Instead of going for the pin, she picked her up to put her in the submission. And I thought, well, this is where the reversal is going to come. But instead, she got the submission, and she won the Divas title. And so as she's celebrating, of course, Lay Cool comes back into the ring to attack her. This brings out Beth Phoenix, who makes her big return. Beth Phoenix aligns herself with Natalya, helps Natalya celebrate. And so now it looks like we're going to get a Lay Cool versus Beth Phoenix and Natalya feud, which, I don't know, guess should be all right. We had Kane versus Edge for the world title. This match was slow, it was boring, nobody cared. They ended up having Edge hit the spear on Kane, and when they both fell down, they both had their shoulders on the mat. Edge had his arm on top of Kane, but both his shoulders were down as well. So the referee said that it was a tie, and with the tie, the title stays with Kane. Edge got mad, threw Kane in the empty wheelchair, and threw him through the barricade off of the wheelchair. It was hokey. It was stupid. And again, no heat. Nobody cared. They had Wade Barrett in back with John Cena. Talked about the fact that Miami was where Nexus had come out, where they beat up John Cena and made their stand. Cut to the ring. We had Nexus come out for the title tag title match. We had Heath Slater, Justin Gabriel versus Santino and Kozlov. They eventually had it down to a short match where Santino was about to hit the Cobra on Heath Slater and was going to win, but then David Otunga, Mike McGillicuddy all jumped up on the apron, and when Santino jumped after those guys, tried to hit him with the Cobra, they both jumped off. He then turned around, and Heath Slater hit him with the finisher, what do they call it, the necktie, and ended up getting the pin. So then Nexus goes to celebrate. The Raw general manager chimes in, tells all the Nexus guys to get the heck out of there because they can't be there for the next match, which is our main event, Randy Orton versus Wade Barrett for the title. John Cena as special referee. Now, here's the thing with this match. Just like the WWE title match, this world title match... The other one was the world title match. This was the WWE title match. That's right. This match, just like the other match, was slow. It was boring. It was not good. Now, part of the reason why maybe it was no good just was simply the fact that Wade Barrett is not ready to be a main event guy. Maybe also it was because it was built around this whole idea of whether or not Cena was going to screw over Randy Orton and give the title to Wade Barrett. And when people were just waiting for that moment to happen, they didn't care about anything else. Either way, the match just was... It had very little heat. It had very little excitement. Eventually, what happened was Wade Barrett started arguing with John Cena, where he thought he should have defeated Randy Orton, but Randy Orton grabbed the bottom rope. So Cena just got mad at Wade Barrett, gave him a shove. Wade Barrett flipped right around to Randy Orton, got hit with the RKO. Randy Orton immediately covered Wade Barrett, and John Cena went 1-2, paused for a second, thought about it, hit the 3. And he hits the 3, and Randy Orton is your WWE champion. Wade Barrett has lost, and John Cena is now fired from WWE. Now, of course, as soon as this happens, they have Randy Orton and John Cena kind of face off against each other a little bit. Nexus guys come running down, try to attack, and the two of them fight them off. And once they get all the Nexus guys to leave, John Cena goes out, gets a title belt, hands it to Randy Orton. The two of them hug. Randy Orton, just acknowledges that you did the right thing. You stood by me. I appreciate that. He left Cena out there. Cena was sad. He took off his armbands. He went out, gave Michael Cole a hug. He gave the sign guy, the guy with the blue shirt and the red hat, who's in the front row of just about every WWE televised event, he gave that guy a hug. He hugged a little kid who was out in the entryway. He smiled at a couple people, waved at a couple people. He waited. People just weren't buying it. Like, it was sad. It was a good moment. It was a full moment. It was a complete moment. But nobody bought that John Cena is fired. They did the angle. They did it perfectly. They did everything they had to do, but people just didn't buy it. So John Cena, he kind of stands on the stage like he's about to leave, but then he turns around, smiles at the crowd, runs out into the crowd, and security starts freaking out, so I don't know if this wasn't planned or what the deal was, but just runs out in the crowd, starts slapping hands and hugging people and just walking through the crowd, just shaking hands with people and almost like a greasy politician trying to get reelected. And just kind of made his way through the arena and then back up the entryway and said goodbye and left. And that was the end of the show. And again, they hit all the right beats. They did everything as if this was his final night on the show. They did everything correct that they needed to do, but just nobody was really buying it. Because how can you? I mean, he's fired. Okay, there's about 100 different storylines they can do. He was fired from Nexus, but Vince McMahon can rehire him. He can be hired by R-Truth to be R-Truth's manager, and that gets him back into the company. I mean, there's tons and tons and tons of, stupid little silly things. They could, have him buy a ticket, be in the front row, and just attack Wade Barrett. And that's another thing. He had promised for weeks that no matter what the outcome of the match was, as soon as it was over, he was going to attack Wade Barrett and beat the crap out of him. Didn't happen. Didn't happen on this show. So there's just a lot of things kind of still up in the air, and a lot of things where people, it's an interesting storyline, and from a storyline kind of point of view, I can be like, okay, I see that this is something that adds a certain layer of drama and intrigue, but at the same time, I don't buy the stipulation. I don't know anybody who buys the stipulation. I don't know 6-year-old kids who actually believe that John Cena is fired. So where they go from here, who knows? But, overall, I thought the pay-per-view as a whole was a thumbs up. Most of the matches were pretty good. The Survivor Series match was kind of lame. The two title matches were weak. But, you know, the ending of the show with John Cena losing, it's just kind of like, well, you know, I kind of saw that coming. I'm surprised that they did it. And I am kind of interested to see where we go from here. So that's your rundown for Survivor Series, everybody. Again, I want to thank you for listening. This is a wrestling radio here at Locker Room HQ, part of the Pop Culture Network. And there you go. In honor of my love of Sheamus, my love for mayonnaise, let's do a Sheamus song to end everything out tonight. And I will talk to you guys tomorrow as we talk about tonight's edition of Monday Night Raw.
I took out Triple H. But how about it? You and me.
Baby, cause in the dark, you can't see shiny cars.
You think for 1 second this is over? You're wrong.
Because when the sunshine, we shine together.
You wanna talk about pathetic, fella?
Said I'll always be your friend.
You see, I will be WWE champion again. Because I took out the son-in-law.
Stand under my umbrella.
You lost, fella. Fella. H.
Under my umbrella.
Fella. H.
Under my umbrella.
Fella. H.
Under my umbrella.
Fella.